So cobbling together both the large story of something like the Trojan War and the returns of the heroes afterwards with these local stories of heroes, what the epic poets are doing is creating something quite unique. It is a cultural document available to all the Greeks, an epic poem available for all of them. Now, we know that this carried on orally, as I've said, for hundreds of years, all over Greece. But then something dramatic happened around 725. And the dramatic shift is that somebody writes it down. Now, when you try to consider the relationship between oral poetry, that is to say, a poetry of performance that changes every time you tell a story, and a written poem, I think you'll see that they're fundamentally different. A written poem is something that you sit down and compose. An oral poem has its own genesis, if you will. In fact, writing is, if you'll pardon my expression, a kind of arthritis applied to oral poetry. That is to say, once you start to have written texts, the oral poem can no longer keep changing as fluidly and as often as it had been doing up until then. Now, it doesn't solidify completely straight away. We know that. We can look at different manuscripts and different fragments of the Homeric poems hundreds of years after it was first written down. We know that it was still undergoing some change. But there has certainly been a psychological shift here. A notion has been created of a single monumental version of the Iliad and the Odyssey. So what? What's important about that, apart from the fact that we have orality moving to writing? What I think happens at this time is that the Homeric poems take on a kind of status, a kind of stature among the Greeks. They become really the nearest that the Greeks have to what we would regard as a kind of sacred text. Now recall, the Greeks do not believe in a single god. They do not have a sacred text handed down from their single god. But with the writing of Homer, they do have the writing down of a moral text that they will return to time and time again. There are many passages that you can point to in the poems that I think evoke something of this quality, the way in which the poems begin to serve as the basis for a code of moral behaviour. For example, there is a point in the Iliad when Sarpedon and Glaucus, two of the Trojan heroes, meet on the plain of battle. And in the midst of the fray, Sarpedon turns to Glaucus and he says, "Come on, we are given double portion of wine, double portion of meat among the Lycians whom we rule. We have well-watered meadows by the river. We have great power among the Lycians. Now, let's go to the fore. Let's be in the first line of battle, so that any Lycians who see us will say, okay, they're worth their double portion of meat, their double portion of wine. These leaders of ours, they are not slack. They will fight." In other words, the way that a Homeric hero presents himself is quite simply to be twice the size of a normal man, twice as strong, twice as powerful, twice as steadfast. What the poems do is, by creating such a vivid model for a man's behaviour, is to establish this code of honour which is based not upon the guilt of a man, gee, if I do that, I'm sinning, but rather on his shame. If I do that, I'm going to be seen to be inferior. The entire focus of this is to create a performance of valour, whether it be military valour or, soon, as we're going to see in another lecture, athletic valour. But either way you look at it, the Homeric hero becomes the basis of what a Greek man is going to model himself on. I may have given the impression that the poems are two-dimensional, that they simply lay out how you're supposed to be, and they're much more than that. And so to balance the anecdote of Sarpedon and Glaucus, I have to refer to another episode which is also critical in the poems. It's one of the few moments of true intimacy in the Iliad. The Iliad is a poem of war. It tells men how to behave in war. And so it has very little space for the world of the family, for the community,